Blog Talk Radio.
Did I just hear a Philadelphia crowd see John Cena get his face planted on the mat by a babyface and the crowd booed? Did I just see John Cena get cheered by a Philadelphia crowd and Dean Ambrose get booed? Let's talk about it. This is the PW Torch Livecast. We are on the air right as SmackDown goes off the air head-to-head with Talking Smack. Thanks for joining us here live at pwtorchlivecast.com. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter. I established the newsletter. That means I first published it, mailed it out many, many years before the internet, back in 1987 when I was in high school, and it's been my job ever since. In fact, I walked out of college and walked into the Torch offices very excited back in 1993 to not have to split my time between covering wrestling and writing papers and studying for tests, and it's been a blast ever since. So thank you for joining me in this latest chapter in the Torch's coverage of pro wrestling. This, the just about every single day, Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter becomes PW Torch Livecast. It's been a long journey. Tonight, SmackDown did all kinds of follow-up on Sunday's Backlash, and it is a it gave us some things to talk about. And at the top of the show today, my guest co-host, and then we'll dive into phone calls too, but my guest co-host for today's program will be Bruce Mitchell, PW Torch senior columnist, who has been writing for the Torch since September of 1990, which, if I do the math, means he's now approaching, because it was, I think, at the very end of September. Actually, I think it was cover dated, the first issue, in October. But nevertheless, he's approaching his 26th anniversary, writing for and doing audio analysis with Pro Wrestling Torch. We'll get to him in just a second. I do want to announce, though, that tomorrow, Pat McNeil, who's been a Torch columnist for over 15 years, will be joining me on Wednesday. He's home again, co-hosting the midweek episode of the PW Torch Livecast, and we'll be talking not just Raw, not just SmackDown, not just Backlash. We'll talk about Impact. We'll talk about the Cruiserweight Classic with the live finals tomorrow night, the final week of the Cruiserweight Classic before they shift to Raw, and much more. So join us. We'll talk about CM Punk too. And then Thursday, on the Interview Thursday episode of the PW Torch Livecast, also, by the way, starting at 1 Eastern, Wednesday and Thursday shows that I host both start at 1 Eastern live. Thursday, I'll be joined live by Kevin Nash. That's right, Kevin Nash, big name, great guest on the live cast. He will be back on the show, and we'll talk about CM Punk and his performance at USC, put the week in perspective, talk about what Kevin Nash is up to, reflect on the Attitude Era. You can start sending in your email questions or topic suggestions for Kevin Nash right now. The email address is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Let's now shift and bring Bruce Mitchell into the conversation. Bruce, welcome to the Tuesday livecast post SmackDown. How are you doing? Bruce, are you there? Bruce, we cannot hear you. I have just made you live. You are calling on your phone. That is your phone number. I am quite sure of it, and I cannot hear you.
Now can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay, something. Yeah. Okay, good. Anyway, sorry about that. I'm disappointed, though, that you, after all the plugs, Kevin Nash, that's pretty cool, that you haven't mentioned that the flagship show of the PW Torch Livecast is on Friday, when Travis Bryan and myself host the livecast.
Is
Friday,
that
7 o'clock Eastern Standard
Well,
time.
Who better to plug it than the host, Bruce? Why do you think I brought you on when I did?
Well, I you know, exactly, and I can demonstrate right now why Friday stands out among all the other ones. What is the difference in Friday and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday? I think you see my point.
Well, one of them is Travis Bryant, the great Travis Bryant.
Exactly, Travis Bryant. That's what I was getting to. That's his name, right?
Yes, yes. Travis Bryant is his name, of Austin, Texas, and the East Coast cast. The other day, Austin is just the Austin, Texas references are everywhere now. I bump into people who just randomly bring it up. I walked on the sidewalk the other day. Somebody had written Austin on the sidewalk. I don't know what's going on. Something weird is going on with Austin, Texas. Ever since Travis moved there, there's a strange effect.
Now, don't you agree with me that? I sound like Mark Madden. Don't you agree with me that Travis should change the name of the East Coast cast because he literally is not. Neither one of the co-hosts are on the East Coast anymore. He's in Texas. I think they're both in Texas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, let's shift to talk.
Oh God,
about
I love when you sell my jokes.
Yeah, let's right, talk about what happened tonight, Bruce. What's the top story coming out of tonight's SmackDown?
The return of John Cena, and the return of John Cena to the main event.
Yeah.
They put over John Cena strong. He got the pin on Miz, not surprising. And I'd say that was the major point that coming out of SmackDown, and it's understandable.
Yeah, yeah. The way that Ambrose was portrayed, or the way that Ambrose came across to the Philadelphia crowd, was as a heel. They sided with John Cena. And not Ambrose. What the heck? What's going
well,
on?
Well, I mean, AJ Styles was put over so strong when he won, and the only person that had any kind of objection, I thought, much of an objection to getting kicked in to Dean Ambrose getting kicked in the nuts was Dean Ambrose, and he really didn't have that strong an objection. I think it was AJ Styles was portrayed as stronger, and Dean Ambrose got beat, and he's out there. He's out there complaining, and John Cena. And also, John Cena was really strong in chewing him out.
I totally
and used the reality of the Steve Austin podcast and what people see as some problems with Dean Ambrose. Now he pushed it really far, but I think they. I mean, you didn't know where the crowd was going to go, but they clearly went with the guy who was the better performer. John Cena, and that part time stuff. His answer, they gave him an answer, which was lazy and part time. And John Cena. There's a lot of things you could say negative about John Cena. Lazy is pretty far down the list. And then the part timer thing is just, well, he's a big star. I don't think that works with them. He hadn't been part time long enough. He's still around a lot. So, I think that's part of it. And it's just, I did like Dean Ambrose attacking him after the match. I thought, if they're going to have a three way, that's fine. I thought that was helpful for Dean Ambrose.
How about
that? He needs to be more aggressive, that he needs to be more.
I'm going to come at you with some rapid-fire topics, Bruce, because I know your time is limited. And by the way, after you go off the show, Travis Bryant, I think, is going to be joining me. So we're going to have a co-host for the whole thing. But I'm glad you were able to make some time for us, Bruce, with your busy schedule to join us for some rapid-fire analysis of SmackDown. And we'll hear your thoughts on the whole week on Friday's primetime edition of Livecast with Travis, who's coming up in a moment here, live from Austin, Texas. Bruce, Miz does the promo, talks about how he wants to be a big deal. He inserts himself into the main event forcefully, and then he does a clean job to John Cena. Is that okay?
John Cena could have pinned AJ Styles, but I think you want to hold that off, so... of the people in the match, John Cena's going to pin somebody, so I guess it had to be Miz, and they sacrificed something in doing that. It's the best choice of not the greatest choices.
Yeah, I feel like, Miz had that promo with Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack. People got excited about it. It's Miz's breakout, and then this week, he kind of makes his case, hey, I'm not... I'm not to be overlooked. I have no idea, Bruce, because I know there were a lot of rapid fire title changes, Attitude Era and beyond. Have there actually been 132 IC champions, or was Miz hopefully exaggerating like Kevin Owens was when he said he was 98% of the reason that he won. Triple H was only 2% that he won the title. I honestly wouldn't be shocked. My over-under would have been like 40. So this is like triple how many I actually think there have been. I hope he was exaggerating.
I hope so, too. I have no idea. Honestly, I have no
don't
idea.
Either.
But that one's been, been passed around a lot.
Yeah, it has
that
been.
That one's been passed around a
I
lot.
Hope. Yeah. I didn't have time to look it up yet. I hope we're not at 132. But
now,
anyway.
I'll say this about what you're saying with Miz.
Yeah.
Miz is important. But if you're choosing between Miz's push and the return of John Cena and WWE is looking at yesterday's Raw rating, the better choice is putting over John Cena strong.
Yeah, these shows are very the post-Raw and post-SmackDown shows. I try to keep it very focused on as much as I can the two shows that we follow immediately. And Wednesday, the midweek show, the flagship, as I call it, is where we cover a lot of topics, and we'll get into the Raw rating more in depth. But I should note it because you just referenced it, Bruce. A 1.88. Historically low for Monday Night Raw. And I thought it was a little, in reaction to that, Bruce, I'm not sure we would have seen the WWE fact on the screen coming out of a commercial bragging about 24 billion YouTube views if it wasn't. To me, that feels kind of random, arbitrary to bring that up this week. And I think it was sort of a way of telling people, yeah, you know, USA Network viewership way down, record lows. But hey, there's this YouTube thing, which doesn't earn them very much money, but it is how a lot of people watch.
Well, you know, it sounds like it doesn't earn them very much money, but they get a dollar per view. And when you figure up a dollar per view, that's 24 million views, 24 billion,
billion
views.
Billion.
That's a lot of money. Billion, $24 billion. That's a lot of money.
Thanks, Bruce. Yeah, if that's the way it works, you're going to be on YouTube tomorrow.
Looking for $100.
I want to get in on this.
Right.
Yeah. I want to get in on this.
Yeah.
I think we all should. All right. Jack Swagger, I want to get your thoughts on a couple more topics before you go when we go to our break and come back with Travis. I thought Jack Swagger pulled the Titus O'Neil in his promo tonight. That was not good.
No, it wasn't. It looked like he made it up 15 seconds before he went out there. I mean, I appreciate Stones fans, but that was just weird. Yeah, it wasn't good.
It was mumble jumble.
No, it wasn't good. It just, yeah. I don't know. And he's got, you know, it's like, hey, the camera's on me during the football game. Hey, baby, I got a hot wife. And then you yell. You know, like, I mean, I don't know what that was. Great, but.
And I'll talk more about this with Travis, and I'll certainly go in depth on the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members, which I will be recording for VIP members right after this show, where I chronologically go through everything on SmackDown, run down the whole show, comment on everything, top to bottom. Swagger, I got a lot to say about. But how, Bruce, a little history lesson here, and let's keep it brief because we can talk about a lot of examples of this. It used to be that when a wrestler left a territory, he would do the honors on the way out. Why? Because he was leaving the territory, and he would put over somebody meaningful, and then he would show up in another part of the country where they had no idea this new main eventer just lost in the other territory. It's like they're a little confused. They're on the same network. If you're going to give Jack Swagger this new push on SmackDown, and he's basically been MIA on Raw, wouldn't you have him either win on Raw or maybe ideally just not wrestle and show up on SmackDown, but lose to Jinder Mahal 24 hours before you then go to SmackDown? That makes it, I mean, I'm sorry, but the announcers look like idiots acting like this was some big acquisition.
Well, we heard about, we heard about on Raw about how SmackDown did a great, I think it was Mick Foley, SmackDown did a great job, but now the red team has to fight back. And we know that fans, most fans either choose the red team or the blue team, and, you know, I watch SmackDown. I'll
Shane
never
McMahon,
watch Raw because I'm loyal to SmackDown.
Shane McMahon, they aired this during SmackDown, that he said, and they underlined it, they showed it, they highlighted that he said on Talking Smack, I don't watch Raw.
Oh, yeah, and the other thing is, whenever you, like, I remember when I worked for a major department store, and they told us never to go into the other stores to see how the other stores did things successfully. Excuse me.
Speaking of shit.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's like you never, like, watch your competition. You never watch your competition and try to learn from it. I mean, that's not what competitors do. No, I completely agree. That's just really silly.
Yeah.
And I'm trying, you know, I'm making I'm making a silly point, and Shane's doing a better job for me. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
And you're exactly right. You have to figure the majority of eyeballs, particularly on SmackDown, have watched Raw. You know, we know there's a deficit between between the audiences of Raw and SmackDown, but you've got to figure, and it's just this guy's been pushed and slotted in a certain way as an opening match guy, and then he goes out there and does that promo on top of it. It's like, okay, it's Jack Swagger, big deal.
And if you have Shane McMahon saying I don't watch Raw. And now he's going to claim SmackDown's a better brand. That's when people who have never left their state, much less the United States, declare it the greatest country in the world. Like, I respect people who have lived in many countries or traveled the world, but if you've lived within a 10 square mile radius and you declare America the greatest, that's kind of what Shane's doing. He's like, I don't know anything else about the world, but I'm pretty sure this is the greatest country. It's even worse. He co-owns both countries. I don't know. It's just a whole attempt to make this competition. It's so
well. That guy that's sitting in his house and it hasn't gone 20 miles. I bet he's watched television and
yes.
Watched some things about countries from around the world. But Shane's not turning on his television and watching on Monday night,
yes.
Or going to Hulu and watching the hour and a half, or
no.
going to YouTube, one of those 24 billion views, and seeing the highlights, or WWE.com or something. But yeah,
all right, Bruce.
Yeah.
You and I will we'll hear. Well, first of all, you'll talk to Travis on Friday, cover the weekend wrestling, the Cruiserweight Classic finals, perhaps some comments on Impact, which airs Thursday night, and whatever else with your primetime callers. And then we'll talk this weekend on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show for a couple hours. We did a three-parter this weekend with part three dedicated almost entirely to nearly an hour of in-depth, really fascinating perspective on the hidden gem section of WWE Network. A lot of good feedback on that so far, and that was a good show. So if VIP members haven't heard that yet, definitely check that out on
yeah.
the RSS feed on your phone or on iTunes or on our ad-free VIP website. If you are not a VIP member, just that alone is worth, if you're interested in wrestling history and understanding what's going on in that Hidden Gems Network and having everything put in perspective with somebody like Bruce, who really knows how to put that kind of thing in perspective like no one else, certainly encourage you to go VIP. pwtorch.com/govip for sign-up info. Bruce, any closing words before we go to our break and come back with Travis?
No, enjoy the show.
Yep, excellent. Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate you stopping by.
All right.
Cool. All right, that's Bruce Mitchell, Torch senior columnist. You can read his columns almost every week in the PW Torch newsletter or on the ad-free pwtorchvip.com website, which is both mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly and ad-free. Everything that you get on pwtorch.com, plus a lot more, all ad-free, mobile and desktop laptop-friendly. Travis Bryant joins me after our first break. We'll be back right after this. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we're back live on PW Torch Livecast. You can find us at PWTorchLivecast.com. While we were at commercial break, Daniel Bryan just revealed that had James Ellsworth pinned John Cena, he would have been on the cover of WWE's 2K17 video game box. Anyway, that's what you might have seen while we were at break. But hopefully you were listening to our plug for MMATorch.com. Travis Bryant of the PW Torch East Coast Cast, available at eastcoastcast.com, and also host of the Friday Primetime episode edition of the PW Torch Livecast, airing on Fridays at 7 Eastern, now joins the show. Travis, welcome back to our Tuesday post-SmackDown Livecast.
What's happening, Wade? Livecast audience, what up?
How's your internet?
So far so good.
Cool.
Really good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, cool. What I want to do is we're going to just go right into phone calls, and we'll get your reaction to the topics as callers bring them up. We set the stage with Bruce on some of the top items of the show. I'm sure our callers have other topics they want to discuss or add their point of view. If you haven't called and you're listening live and you want to, just give us a call, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And just push one on your touchtone phone if you want to join us. I'm getting a little bit of feedback, Travis, since I brought you on live. I might be hearing your headset maybe or something, if you could turn the volume down. If not, we'll or your earpiece, whatever it is. I'm hearing my voice a little bit in an echo. Let's go to...
Hopefully that helped a little bit.
Okay, cool. Let's go to... I'll let you know. Let's go to our first call. 904, you're up first. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Mike from Beloit, Wisconsin, where I'm at tonight.
Cool. What have you got for us, Mike?
I thought overall it was a good show. Jack Swagger, I like the new look. Obviously, the promo was a disaster. I think if they really wanted to get him over, instead of having him come out and cut that promo, he should have just come out and just laid into Baron Corbin. And I think that would have gone over a lot better than what that promo did. The Ascension, wow, that wasn't good either. But I do like what Heath Slater's doing. I think he's going to get over big once they get eventually get to that feud between him and a Rhino. I imagine that's where they're going with it. And John Cena, man, just tore it up. I mean, comes back in, picks up right where he left off. My final thing is The Miz. I think he's doing the best work of his career. I agree with you guys that maybe he should not have gotten over or gotten pinned, but I guess, like Bruce said earlier, I guess somebody had to get pinned. I guess it's better him than AJ. And I do have one last thing, and I'll listen off the air. Dean Ambrose, do you think that was a heel turn? It came across that way, or was it more of just the leading up to the three-way?
Good question. I'm going to throw to Travis on that one. Five topics, I think, for Mike. You can pick and choose what you want, but for sure, start with what you thought you just saw with John Cena and Dean Ambrose tonight.
That was not a heel turn from Ambrose, no. I had a little... head nod at the end towards the crowd, you know, what? You know, maybe a little visually, but it wasn't a heel turn. He just was, you know, pissed off and rightfully so. And I didn't.
Do you think they're surprised? Travis, real quick, do you think that Dean and WWE and Cena were surprised that of all cities, Philadelphia, your former home, was cheering for Cena and anti Dean Ambrose?
Well, my friend I went to high school with. She took her son to his first, probably show period, but definitely live, like, or a TV taping. He's 8 or 9. So I'm not surprised. Philadelphia has disappointed me as a crowd and fan base in the last 5 years, more times than not, as far as how I, you know, as far as responses and who they cheer for and how and all that.
Yeah, I mean,
another one I just didn't understand.
You still have Rhino getting residual ECW chants, so it's not like the audience is completely turned over. I think part of this is...
which is ridiculous in its own...
well, yes. But it is a relevant fact to this point, which is... there's people in that crowd who know Rhino was in ECW, are chanting it, they know it's Philadelphia, and that's where ECW was started, and... they're cheering John Cena because I thought he delivered on the microphone against Dean Ambrose and came back with... I mean, I thought that was President Obama talking about Donald Trump out there, the way John Cena was talking smack about Dean Ambrose. He was happy to be back. He had all this enthusiasm. He had a spring in his step. I thought Cena looked kind of rejuvenated and had an energy to him that I think the audience picked up on, Trav.
Yeah, I didn't understand. I turned the show on at... whatever, 7, 12, you know, 12 after the hour. It was maybe 8, I don't know, it was just a few minutes into the show, and he said his last, like, major line to AJ, Cena did while they were by themselves, so I missed that entire part of their alone promo, and then Ambrose's music hit, and I didn't understand Cena's tone, what's his problem with Ambrose? Like, what did Ambrose do to him that he's talking so slick to him? And I totally did not understand what was happening.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
did I miss something?
Well,
why was Cena being such a, you know, such a prick to him?
Well, Cena just said that that he can't, you know, Styles cut a promo celebrating his title win, and then John Cena, Styles did, and then John Cena came out. And, you know, because Styles is saying I'm the champ who runs the camp is his new catchphrase instead of I'm the man. And so Cena's like, whoa, you know, if you're going to talk about who the man is, I'm in that conversation. And he said he wants to make history with Styles because one more win puts him in the conversation with, Ric Flair. He said he called Ric Flair the greatest champ of all time. He referred to the greatest champ of all time, so I guess maybe he's talking about Triple H. I don't know, but no, he was talking about Flair, and I guess Flair is officially the greatest champ of all time within the narrative of WWE now. And then Dean Ambrose walked out and interrupted him, walked right past Cena, just strode right past him, went nose to nose with Styles.
Right, I saw that part.
Yeah, so
I saw the intro and everything.
So that's what you missed. And Cena did, you know.
Right.
And
what the hell was Cena's problem?
I think he just wanted, wanted to butt in line for a title shot, and Ambrose came out, rightfully so, as the ex-champ, wanting his title shot.
Right, rightfully so, after getting kicked in the balls and his title stolen from him, like he said.
Yeah.
And then Cena scolding him like he's some kind of camp counselor. You know,
yes.
What's happening here? Like, what did Ambrose do? You know, Piston Cena's Cheerios. It was weird. It doesn't make any more sense to me now in context.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue our conversation with callers, see if any of us can make sense of it. But like I said,
and Miz is doing very good work to answer another
of
his many questions and topics. Miz is doing really good stuff, and yeah, he had to take that L tonight.
Yeah. There's really no other out unless they do a non-finish, which probably was considered. But Miz is kind of the bounce-back guy. He can take those falls and manage to come back because he has a beautiful wife. Speaking of which, Travis, Jack Swagger.
I don't know. Yeah, what? it's almost as if, like, I think what you said earlier, it's like they told him 10 minutes before that segment, we're going to do this with you, and you signed with, the gimmick is you signed with SmackDown now, and you're happy to be here, and, you know, go ahead.
Yeah. I thought
and
it was good.
And he did not do good job at all. I don't think it was Titus O'Neil bad. It was just bad.
But it wasn't endearing. Like, Titus was so bad, he almost kind of felt sympathy for him. Jack was sort of, like, cocky about it. Like, this is how I read Jack. And I've been a fan
of... he didn't just lose clean in 3 minutes or less to Jinder Mahal the night before, yeah. No.
Yeah, and to me, Travis, the content of that promo and the delivery, to me, was like D'Lo Brown showing up on TNA or Damian Sandow showing up on Impact going, I thought he was going to break into, I'm tired of being underutilized. SmackDown's going to give me a chance to show the real me, which would have been fine had he not just lost to Jinder Mahal. But as for this notion that you and Bruce, that Bruce said in your backing, that, he just was told before he went out there, to me, that looked like months of planning that went awful. That seemed like somebody who said, I don't need writers. I can just go out there and wing it. And maybe they did. And maybe they're trying to prove a point to all of us in the camp that say, stop over-scripting guys and let them just cut promos. Because, you know, sometimes...
Yeah, but that camp isn't saying, yeah, completely let everybody go out there and do what they want either. I mean, it's not all or nothing argument. It's...
Yes.
Thing called nuance.
Right, I know.
But yeah.
Yeah, it was rough. All right, let's go to our next caller. 916, you're up. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, it's Andrew from Sacramento, California.
Hey, Andrew, thanks for calling. What do you got for Travis and me?
What was your question again? Sorry, I got interrupted.
Oh, no, go ahead. I think you just overheard some background noise.
Yeah, no, it's just because my dad came into my room.
I just forgot your
question was.
Oh, I didn't ask you a question. You called us. You're supposed to ask us a question or bring up a topic.
Oh, hi. I was going to bring up what your thoughts were on the Triple Threat, because I'll be attending No Mercy because it'll be in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since we had something big like that, because I remember my first pay-per-view was the Bash, where I saw Punk and Hardy. But what are your guys' thoughts on the Triple Threat and why they gave Cena the let go instead of earning his spot, since he lost the style twice and they just gave it to him just because he asked for it?
That's a good point. There is not a good storyline reason other than John Cena being the man and Styles antagonizing him with being the face who runs the place. There's not really a sports-like reason, Travis, for Cena to march in and be added to a title rematch. Dean Ambrose rightfully should get a one-on-one shot.
Yeah, Cena just walking in after losing his last match against a guy who's now holding the title. Like, well, you lost to him. You shouldn't be anywhere near. Not anywhere near. Okay, maybe you win. You pin the guys. Certainly, you should start getting some consideration. But he hasn't. He lost to him. And he's been gone for a month, 5 weeks, whatever, however long he's been gone. And then he immediately just gets... he's such... it's the same thing. He'd complain about that. Not the same thing, but he could see him using that on the line against a guy that went away to do something and came back to...
Yeah.
And immediately got put in the title spot after losing. You lost. Like, do something in a match before. I guess tonight he did, but it was already set.
Exactly, yeah. I could and this, by the way, is a totally unfair analogy, but I'm going with it, Travis. It's as if Mickey Gall beats Sage Northcutt, in a couple months, and then CM Punk comes out and demands a title shot or a rematch. It's like, no, you lost. You lost to Mickey. You don't get to come out and demand a match. Okay, I just had to sneak that in. Storyline-wise, it's weird because I actually thought John Cena was a little bit more heelish tonight, but it does show, and we see this in politics sometimes, we see it in other sports, sometimes a person who just has more of a swagger, an energy, and a confidence, who's willing to get in somebody's face, earns the respect of the fans more, if there's any kind of ambiguity going in, and yeah, it's just weird, and I think the fans started turning on Dean on Sunday too, because Styles was so damn good in that match, and Dean was just kind of keeping up. I thought he did a respectable job keeping up. But there does seem to be, I don't want to read too much into it, but I think there's some signs that the crowd is sort of half expecting that Dean is going to be a heel, or they want him to be a heel, or they just don't like him as a babyface anymore. Nothing like Roman Reigns. It's a different vibe I'm getting, but I mean, the way they reacted Sunday and the way they reacted tonight, it does seem something's going on, Travis.
Yeah, I don't understand, but what's the crowd's problem? What do you want?
Yeah.
I just don't know how to, what the hell? Crowd? Audience? Like, what's the problem?
I think Vince McMahon feels that way. Vince McMahon, by the way, WWE announced, I think I mentioned this on the live cast last night, or else on the Keller Hotline, one or the other, that Vince blew out a quad, apparently, according to WWE and various sources. I believe it was Sunday night, because he was at Backlash. I heard he was at Backlash Sunday night. So he works out after live events, so he must have blown out his quad on Sunday night, and so he's going to have surgery, but apparently he'll be back in the headquarters before Hillary Clinton is back on the campaign trail, Travis. And I wouldn't be surprised if Vince didn't want to beat Hillary back. That would be important to him.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's stick with the nines. Let's go to 914. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Julian, you're Rochelle.
Say that a little slower and clearer. Your line's a little fuzzy for us.
Jordan, New Rochelle.
Jordan, New Rochelle. Yeah, we need a comma between the name and the city. All right, they blended together the first time. Cool. Jordan, what have you got for us?
Okay, so not a plug for another show, but I also listened to Ring Rust Radio, and they were talking about the segment with how a lot of people backstage, like, it's really stupid and pointless, like, their conversations they'll be having. They should be interacting with people for the ultimate goal to be getting a title. So I like how backstage you really saw when AJ Styles was looking to get a partner, that Baron Corbin's like, I don't want to be your partner. I want that title. Like, that's adding some, like, I guess you could say, like, a little bit, like, character progression with him saying, all right, you know, he wants, like, a world to be, like, a champion.
Yeah.
So I feel like listening to other shows, they're saying what really a lot of people think Cena is going to win, like, the title at WrestleMania. So something is obviously going to happen at No Mercy and phased out and lengthen AJ Styles' reign. So I can definitely see Baron Corbin challenging for the title, or a lot of people are begging for WWE to call up Samoa Joe after he works, like, that, I guess, NXT title rematch. So I always think you need to assert people, even backstage, people like Apollo Crews saying, we want to be champion. So you have those people, Styles can go over. And, like, do you think, like, anyone except for really Cena and Ambrose who can could challenge Styles? Because we don't want to see Ziggler. Because Ziggler, they're just like, Ziggler, I think, is he's just getting buried. He loses every match, but he talks like this big game. It's just like, you get buried every match, so why should we believe in you?
Cool, Jordan, thanks. Yeah, no, good topic. Travis, what I wouldn't be surprised if the three-way match, the triple threat, turns out to be perhaps a Dean Ambrose turn on Cena, or just a disagreement between fellow babyfaces who don't get along. That leads to Cena versus Ambrose at a follow-up to delay the John Cena-AJ Styles singles match and derail Cena's goal of becoming a champion who ties that record. And if that's the case, I got asked this, I believe, yesterday on the live cast, Cena versus Styles one-on-one, is that a WrestleMania match? Is that what they're kind of setting the table for? And maybe they'll take a detour after this next pay-per-view? Or do you think that's not a WrestleMania match and we'll see a one-on-one Styles-Cena match sooner?
No, I booked it out in my head that that's going to be in Orlando in, at WrestleMania, Cena versus AJ. Three for the title going to Cena trying to tie Flair.
Boy, I'd like to see that. I think the tying Flair, and if Styles holds a title that long, I think that's a WrestleMania-worthy match. My initial thought on that yesterday was they're not going to wait that long, and also they're going to look for somebody, quote, bigger for John Cena to face. You know, somebody, an Undertaker, or I don't even know. I will be impressed if they give Styles that spot. I guess I'm just, you know, having watched WWE enough, I'm a little skeptical that they, even though they're really high on AJ, that they'll see AJ Styles as the marquee faces to put on the WrestleMania poster, so to speak, next to each other.
I think he's earned that position at this point, yeah. And definitely by then, by March or April, you know, lead up to, you know, having the championship for, you know, 5-6 months at that point, and defending his title at the Rumble and whatever in various pay-per-views, I think he'll have more than earned it by then, and I think that's where they're going. I hope that's where they're going.
The Baron Corbin exchange with AJ I thought was good. If somebody, we won't give you a guilt trip if you watch Talking Smack Live. Curious how Baron Corbin did. I'll be watching that later on. I'm high on Baron Corbin's heel persona. I like that he just says, I don't want to team with you. I want to beat you for that championship. It does set the stage possibly for Cena Ambrose at Survivor Series, perhaps, and then you would have Baron Corbin. Is he at all ready, or is that more planting a seed for middle of next year? Like, at what point is Baron Corbin seriously going to be looked at as an actual possible contender? And second of all, yes, Corbin said that, but if you're trying to get AJ over as a heel, Baron Corbin's not going to be a babyface anytime soon. Do you really want to put AJ in a situation where I think the fans are going to cheer AJ? I don't know that that's the match that makes sense anytime soon.
I think it does. I think that could be a main event for SmackDown pay-per-view this winter. I think he can headline something. If they do a SmackDown November or December pay-per-view, SmackDown only one, I think Corbin can be on top of.
Well, if Styles were a babyface, if Styles were a babyface, but
I mean,
if you're trying to establish Styles as a heel champion, I just don't think in his second title defense you put him. I mean, he's already going to be in there against Ambrose, who may or may not be someone who the fans are rooting against. I mean, when Styles and Ambrose are facing each other and Cena's not involved, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the crowd's not cheering for Styles. And then you put him in again next month, perhaps, or the month after against Baron Corbin. I just don't know. I mean, I like that Corbin declared that he wants it. I just don't think he's earned it storyline-wise within the narrative, and I also just don't think it's a good idea to have a heel-heel matchup, especially if the goal is for Cena to get cheered against Styles at Mania, to then put Styles in a position to be cheered. So that's what trips me up on that one, but nevertheless. All right,
yeah.
Travis, we're going to go to my bottom of the hour break, 10 minutes late. When we come back, we'll take more phone calls. Travis Bryant of EastCoastCast.com is my guest. If you joined us in progress, be sure to download the show and start at the beginning. Bruce Mitchell, PW Torch senior columnist, joined me for the first 10 or 15 minutes giving his thoughts on the program. We'll be back after this. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back live on PW Torch Livecast, the Tuesday night edition immediately following SmackDown. I now host Mondays and Tuesdays immediately as Raw and SmackDown go off the air. Tune in to pwtorchlivecast.com for a live stream or give us a call at 515-605-9345. I do want to note that a sponsor of this program is Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear, and now WWE merchandise. For less than $20 a month, when you get their regular crate, you get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items, and more, based on a different theme. Each month, there's a different theme. Themes are inspired by major movie and video game releases, as well as pulling from pop culture franchises such as Star Wars, Marvel, The Walking Dead, The Legend of Zelda, and many more. Loot Crate guarantees over $40 in retail value in every crate. Sometimes it's a lot more. It's more than a subscription box service, too. It's an entire community of fans who share their experience and interact with each other around the unboxing of each month's crate, and they ship to over 27 countries. So you're probably in one of those countries. So check it out. Loot Crate is like a friend who knows what you love and surprises you with an awesome present every month. Head over to lootcrate.com and enter code PWTORCH at checkout to save $3 on any new subscription. That's lootcrate.com and enter coupon code PWTORCH to save $3. And when you get to the website and you pick a crate, you will notice that there is a WWE Slam crate now, and that is one of the options, along with Loot Anime, Loot Gaming, Loot Pets, Loot Wear, Halo, Star Wars, Call of Duty. Cool stuff. Marvel, a lot of cool themes, a lot of cool boxes. Go check it out. That's lootcrate.com. Travis Bryant, my co-host today on the post-SmackDown show, and we are talking with callers about tonight's episode of SmackDown. Give us your thoughts. Let's go next to area code 478. 478, thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling.
Darrell from Georgia. How you doing today, Wade? How you doing, Travis?
Doing well, Darrell.
Hey,
go ahead.
Okay. Today, I really like what Miz did all the way until what they did with him to the end. I think out of everybody, he was the only one that got like some type of heat, some type of heel heat, and I really like what he did. And I want to ask you a question about, do you think they're booking the tag teams a little more like how the Revival is in NXT, because with Usos doing the taking out the legs and how they trying to re-correct Gallows them on Monday night, I think they're trying to see and get all the heel tag teams more like the Revival. I want to ask y'all that question.
Travis, your comments on Darrell's point about this tag team style of wrestling. Got lots of background.
I think it's a concerted effort to make the tag divisions, both of them, just a little more tense and a little more, you know, I want to, you know, punch a guy in the face. Could that be because the Revival have, like, set a template and shown that, like, wow, this can be done and be done this way really well? Possibly and probably. But they're still going to do things the Raw and SmackDown way. But I do like how they've incorporated some aspects and some better psychology, and that's really what it comes down to.
As far as the roster
split, that's what the Revival are so good at.
Well, there's so many things NXT is doing that resonates with fans, and I don't even know that Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn are aware of them. I'm not even sure people who run NXT are fully aware of even fully grasping everything that it is that makes people like NXT. Just ran into a friend of mine at the grocery store today he lives in the same city I do, but I only see him a couple times a year, and we always talk wrestling. We're going to NXT on Sunday, and we're discussing those plans, but I hadn't talked to him in a while, and he's like, oh yeah, I have WWE Network just to watch Cruiserweight Classic and NXT. Hi, Dave. And he's so excited to go, and he wants to see Shinsuke Nakamura, and he thinks he's money, and he's excited to be part of the Robert Roode entrance, but he doesn't watch Raw anymore. It's too long, he says. 3 hours, just too long. So he'll just watch clips on YouTube if he hears anything's good. I mean, that is going around. And so, I mean, the more that they can incorporate some NXT traits, even subtle things like the way they portray tag teams, Travis, I think it's only good. I just don't know if they can fully capture, with Vince McMahon in charge and Kevin Dunn producing, what makes NXT special. I mean, I think you'd just kind of have to promote everybody in NXT, the roster and the producer, the director, the writers, the bookers, the announcers, the vibe, everything. I just don't think you can just adopt it and get the 100% NXT experience. That said, I vote for them trying because I think it would make the main product better.
Absolutely. That's why I kind of qualified it there. It's a bit of an effort, you can tell, but they're still going to do it their way.
Yep. Oh, don't forget, if you want to support our PW Torch livecast and Pro Wrestling Torch in general, when you shop Amazon, be sure to go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. So when you're going to shop at Amazon, you can support PW Torch by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go to that page, there's a link to Amazon. Just click on the US or UK link and shop away. But because you started at pwtorch.com/Amazon, we get a commission on that shopping trip. You can also bookmark that page at that point and return to that bookmark, and we'll get credit each time. We appreciate those of you who are already doing it. And if you haven't yet, think of us. So don't type in AMAZ, stop in your tracks, and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Back to the phone lines. We go to 781 next. 781, thanks for calling. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. This is Mike calling from Boston. How are you gentlemen doing tonight?
Doing well, Mike. Thank you for calling. What do you got for Travis and me?
Hey, I'm glad to get on. Thanks, Wade and Travis. So a couple booking things really quick and a couple thoughts on Cena. You had mentioned that you thought he was a lot looser with his promo tonight. And do you think that maybe not necessarily having to be the man after a decade of having to be the man is allowing him to maybe cut loose a little bit and kind of, instead of having to be the same kind of staid character he's been for a decade, he can maybe tap into some different facets of it now that he is kind of hitting part-time status and the company is looking to push new people ahead of him.
Yeah, Travis, is it also somewhat generational, Travis? Is it just the crowd is getting to the point, kind of like with Hogan, where, you know, the hardcore fans were anti-Hogan back in the day. They were Ric Flair fans, and they'd boo Hogan if they even bothered to attend a WWF house show. And then when he got to the NWO and WCW and turned heel, they were kind of like, well, that reminds me of my childhood, so I'm gonna cheer him now because it reminds me of my childhood. Is Cena getting to the point where some 12-year-olds who loved him then turned to 18-year-olds who booed him, and now they're getting a little nostalgic for him? Or is something like that going on too, where just the sheer seniority and also not being on once or twice a week every week is leading to his act being a little fresher. I don't want to overplay what happened in Philly tonight, but it does seem like it's been creeping up on Cena that the U.S. title run and putting in a good showing, having so many good matches, and maybe just not, you know, being compared favorably to Roman Reigns can also be helping him right now. So yeah, just talk about what's going on with Cena and if you think Mike has a point.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe a little. Cena's still just bottom line an absolute cornball, and no one like that's like knows. And everything doesn't have to be super cool. Like cornball stuff has its place, but he is certainly a cornball, and he doesn't even. I mean, he embraces it wholeheartedly with his color schemes, and he's just a dork. I mean, it's not even. His, you know, his big dumb shorts. I mean, it's just his thing. So I don't think anybody's going to get nostalgic or ironically want to cheer a cornball. Like, no, you fundamentally not like the guy for fundamental reasons. Those reasons are still there, and you're only older to understand them more. I just think it's more. That crowd, the fact that he hasn't been around for a month or so, and he was in there with the other personalities.
But I guess I had other points too, and I know you have other callers.
No, go ahead, Mike.
But I just thought maybe now that he doesn't have to be on every week, that you could actually let him try some different things because he's no longer necessarily the face of the brand, that you have some younger guys or some guys you're bringing up to kind of take that spot, and he doesn't have to be on.
Mike, we lost you right as you're saying he doesn't have to be on. I think you meant twice a week or just every week?
Are you still there?
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Still there?
Yep.
He doesn't have to necessarily be on every two shows every week.
Right.
He can just be doing his own thing, really, you know, and maybe kind of hit some different character notes at this point. And also, you know, I think that U.S. title run and the matches he's had with Styles have done him a world of good with your, you know, more plugged-in fan because he's putting on some damn good matches.
He's been doing that for 10 years, if not more. I mean, the guy, once he took Great Khali in 06 to a passable main event, the You Can't Wrestle chance where we're stupid and all of that. That is not that. See, John Cena is not pulling out or adding new character traits or evolving as a character. He's John Cena. He's going to be John Cena, a cornball guy that wears terrible shirts. So I don't think adding layers or anything is necessarily something I'd attribute to, you know, Cena. Sure, he's gotten better and he's had some fantastic matches and been in some really, really cool stuff in the last 2 years, but he's still John Cena.
In terms of booking, I mean, like, I don't, like, Jack Swagger is a charisma vacuum. I mean, he's terrible. But if you want to push this idea that a character can jump brands, that there's going to be trades or jumps from SmackDown to Raw, why not do something? I mean, like, right now you have Cesaro and Sheamus doing their best of seven with a title shot on the line. If Cesaro pulls out, like, a 0-3-0 deficit come from behind and, you know, takes a thing, why not have someone like that with some momentum jump ship and then say, I'm coming out. I want that title shot, and I want Styles. It would be a fresh matchup for one. It would be one that could tear down the house, and you have a clear-cut babyface with Cesaro who can just go and go and go. I mean, that would be, I think, something where fans would talk about where, I mean, I don't know if Jack Swagger has kids, but if they did, I bet they change the channel when he comes on because he's just that boring.
Wow. Maybe we'll see Curtis Axel and Jack Swagger teaming up. Travis, your thoughts. Thanks, Mike.
No, I mean, some good points, some harsh ones.
yeah.
But some good ones. You know, I don't think Jack Swagger's as bad as I don't think he's a charisma vacuum. I think he's just been put in some horrible positions for consistent stretches of time that have not done him any good. I love the idea of Cesaro, you know, coming back. He better win this thing, regardless what they do two or four of them afterwards. I like the idea of him winning and then jumping, because it fits the whole, you know, the lead up, and or not the lead up, the aftermath of the draft with his promo and him kind of saying, "I wish I would have went to SmackDown," where they could finally, like, and they could even sell it. Took us 2 months, 3 months to do it, but we've been, you know, we've been working with them, and, well, I don't know as to how sports they want to keep it, because that would be maybe tampering, but we've been keeping an eye on his contract situation, however they want to word it, if they even care to cover that.
How will Shane know what's happening, Travis?
How will he know? Yeah.
Maybe something.
Yeah, when Shane said that, I did think of, I don't know what's more absurd, him saying that or Bruce been saying that for the last, you know, 6-8 weeks. Oh, no, I'm SmackDown guy. I don't like Raw, Stephanie, and blah, blah, blah. but, yeah, a guy that has to cover the industry and the guy that's, you know, default owns the industry.
Well, and one of them's being sarcastic, you know, and the other thing he's adding to the storyline. So
I don't even watch Raw. Like, what a Dixie Carter type thing to say.
that is an ultimate
totally.
Insult.
Like, that's I expected. Ultimate. I'd be like, what an idiot. You know, like typical Dixie Carter. But Shane, yes. would think he'd be coached or at least given a lot better line.
Yeah, I don't even watch it. I don't even watch it. The world's coolest dad. He's too busy. He's too busy to watch Raw. He's preparing SmackDown. He's dedicated to his job. All right, let's go to area code 334 next. 334, thanks for calling. You're on with Travis Bryan. I'm Wade Keller. What have you got for us?
Hey, it's CJ from Alabama. Hey, I was wondering. I tuned in late because I was I DVR SmackDown, so I fast forward through what I don't want to watch.
Sure.
And so I didn't hear the. Very beginning, what you guys are talking about.
You're more committed than Shane McMahon
is.
No. All right, go
ahead. The booing at the end for Ambrose, you think that was just because he got on Cena, or do you think that it was I don't know. It seems like his character's starting to make a turn. Does it seem like that to you, or am I just reading too much into it?
Well, Travis, we did talk about it earlier, but Travis is
okay.
Well, no, but that's okay. You're adding to it, so no problem. And the Stone Cold podcast, this, Travis, is that a factor? Did Ambrose? I mean, did enough people see that and go, you know, Ambrose looked like he got woken up from a nap. He's been kind of.
Enough people in that crowd saw it because they, you know, at least they knew
of it,
you know, something. And I just thought it was them giving him way more credit. First off, it was just so shoehorned in, like, okay, that was like 6 weeks ago, and oh, you weren't around or whatever the situation. So here you go, here you are now, all weeks later. It's not even a story anymore, and you're shoehorning this line in to cut the guy down for no real reason beyond, I want to usurp his position as far as the contenders go.
Well, and that's, so, they're doing that now. They're trying to add a little bit of a is it real, is it not aspect. It's very deliberate right now. The finish of Orton Lesnar is. As botched as it was, especially the follow-up, they wanted people to think that Lesnar laid it on too thick with Orton. They loved the incident with Jericho. That there's some thought that Orton's still suffering the effects of Lesnar. Oh, that makes it seem like things can happen that are real. And now you got Cena maybe taking a dig at Ambrose. Was that scripted? Was it not? Daniel Bryan and Miz, you know, very believable segment in many, many ways, and saying things that, oh, and the rumor is Vince wasn't happy with some of the things that they said. Like, they seem to be really embracing that they want to leave people guessing, and I just think the writers and Cena saw that as an opportunity, Travis, to have people go, ooh, I think they get off on that right now. I'm not sure if they figured out how to turn it into money or make the show better, but I think that they think that that's something that will make the product in the show better.
Right. I suppose. And Ambrose is the heel because after all that, I'm just sitting here thinking of it as you explain it. Like, how is, like, Cena's the jerk in this situation?
Yeah.
But he's a jerk in a lot of situations. So.
All right. 801, you are up next. State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Derek from Utah.
Hey, Derek from Utah. What do you have to say that disagrees with something Travis and I have said earlier in the show?
Oh, well, I missed half the show, so if I do disagree with it, this will be happenstance.
Okay, well, it'll probably happen anyway if our track record is any indication. Always good to hear from you, though. Go ahead.
I just think it's interesting. You know, I think a lot of the time we talk about WWE and how they position baby faces and heels, if they deliberately do so these days, or the effectiveness in which they do so these days.
Yeah.
But I think the Dean Ambrose reaction, as well as an AJ Styles reaction, and even Kevin Owens shamelessly cheating to win the championship and yet getting a baby face reaction, shows that maybe the fans have more to do with who they want to cheer and who they want to boo rather than vice and virtue when it comes to heroes and villains in modern day wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a topic with Todd Martin and I on the Fix with Todd Martin, Travis.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, go ahead.
How I've totally, like, you know, I mean, fans are still dumbasses in a lot of sense, but, like, hear Todd explain, it's like not, you know, society, we're going through that now, where you're just so mad at the symptoms, like, oh, be better. And you're just totally letting off the hook the reason why the fans have gone into their, like, hey, I'll book this the way I want it to go, because they're just not getting a good enough story. They're not getting a good enough, consistent enough, long-term story with characters they care about and ones that they don't want to, and want to see get beat up. It's tough. And Todd Martin's made some fantastic points in the last 2 weeks, and I've come around a little bit. Like, yeah, we're just as fans letting them totally off the hook because of the things we see right in front of us, fan reactions and whatever.
Well, and I'll say this too. I mean, this is not inevitable that the fans are reacting against the narrative or against the positioning. And I do think there's a bit of a cop-out when WWE says, we're just letting the fans decide. I mean, no. They want the fans to react a certain way. They wanted them to be into Randy Orton and John Cena in the unification match. They wanted them to be into Batista in the skinny jeans. They wanted them to be into Roman Reigns. They didn't want them to be into Daniel Bryan. They wanted to co-opt the Yes chant away from Daniel Bryan to Big Show and Stephanie and all that. They wanted a lot of things to happen that aren't happening. They empowered the fans. But with all the Taboo Tuesday and John Cena standing in the ring saying, we're here to entertain you. Did we entertain you tonight? Because it's all about you. It's like, no. The promotion should be portraying what's going on the way UFC does, which is we charge you a lot of money for the honor of watching great athletes fight for a championship that matters, and you are privileged to be here. React how you want, but this show is this fight is going on either way. Thank you for coming. Not everything we do is to provide entertainment for our fans. But by doing that, and many other things I've talked about during that stretch of years, the fans now are like, all right, we're the focus group, and we're going to be heard. And a lot of it is just sort of, as Vince McMahon would say, damn millennials, you know, and the YouTube comment section and Twitter and all the social media. Now everybody's got a voice. And it's turned. They've created this monster, but the monster was created and fed by lousy choices in casting. They keep casting wrestlers who have traits that the fans today will like that Vince McMahon doesn't understand as heels, and they keep casting people who today's fans don't like, but Vince McMahon looks at and goes, I want him to be my poster boy, and books him as them as baby faces. So the casting errors and sloppy storytelling and awful announcing when it comes to just being blasé and passive about cheating. I mean, they've created this whole narrative structure where you're a fool if you don't cheat to win. Well, you completely take away heel heat when you're saying, good for Cesaro. He needlessly cheated to win. Not needlessly. He cheated to win without provocation. Because in WWE, apparently we celebrate breaking the rules to get ahead when you get frustrated because you're down 3-1. Well, when you do that, and they inconsistently do that, but very often do that, you create a narrative structure where you feel like a fool for booing a heel for cheating because Booker T on the pre-show says, you do what you got to do to win. That's what we admire in society. So the narrative is so screwed up, Derek. It's so screwed up, so poorly executed that they've conditioned the fans they've miscast the wrestlers, empowered the fans, and then told terrible storylines. Other than within the narrative, more often than not, you're told winning is all that counts, not how you win. So it's not just one thing. WWE really does, in most cases, want to have a baby face and a heel. They really do, because common sense says that's how you promote pro wrestling. This isn't some nuanced, heavily scripted, top-shelf series on television or movie or comic book where you can really get into this is pro wrestling. You've got a live audience who are supposed to cheer one guy and boo the other. That's what draws. Not an NFL game where you don't care about who wins. You want to watch an NFL game where you care about who wins. You've got one team you want to see win and one you want to see lose. That's way more entertaining than watching two teams just because you enjoy a good football game. I mean, that's enjoyable, but it's way more fun when it's your team against their top rival who you hate. That's what they're always aiming for. And they should be, and they're aiming for that more often than they admit because they're swinging and missing so much lately. And yes, there's been some bad bookers who thought, oh, good guys, bad guys, passe. Let's just let the fans decide. No, you do your job, and you cast people correctly, and you tell the story the right way with all the pieces in place. You're going to have people going completely nuts for the babyface positively and completely against the heel. And you know what? We've seen plenty of examples of that in NXT where that's worked. Derek, your follow-up, and then I'll throw back to Travis.
I'm not going to disagree with any of your points.
Yeah.
I just think that how you weigh what has caused the fans to behave the way that they behave is different than I would weigh it. I think the key right now that I see is fans are unable to suspend disbelief. And it's not only, I'm not saying fans like other people, I'm saying myself as well.
Yeah.
Because even though I can look at AJ Styles and AJ Styles can cut a good heel promo, or I can listen to Kevin Owens talk and say he's being a really good heel, the fact is, when I watch those guys wrestle, the appreciation for what they do at the level they do it makes me cheer them. And it doesn't matter if they're good guys or bad guys. My suspension of disbelief, knowing what I know about pro wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm still here, those guys. It's almost like
the liquid guy and the liquid metal guy in Terminator who's like totally into that character and he's stone faced and he plays that role and you go, man, what a great act. I can't help but cheer this guy. Like, no, he's stabbing moms in the face and blowing people up and trying to kill John Connor. Like, I don't care how talented the man playing this liquid monster, liquid metal monster is. He's terrible, and I want, you know, on a Terminator 1 or whatever, original, to, you know, blow him up and throw him in that vat of hot metal.
But
so,
let me jump in on this, Travis, because what if Derek, let me throw this in as an example, then I want you to respond to both. If there's a movie where somebody is cast as the babyface and they're not a very good actor, and it's well known that they got cast because of connections that they have or international box office appeal that doesn't resonate with the American audience, or they're married to the producer, whatever it is, and they're not good in that role, you might go to a theater and watch a bad guy who plays a part really, really well, the villain plays a part really, really well, and you might actually be kind of finding yourself rooting for the heel within the narrative storytelling. And I think that's what happens with WWE. People didn't like John Cena. Ric Flair fans back in the day didn't like Hulk Hogan. And a lot of fans didn't like John Cena because he was cornball and he was aimed at kids and it's chain gang and a different colored t-shirt. And then Roman Reigns, the stiff from The Shield, who gets to keep the music and wears the vest and comes out through the crowd while the other two go off and create their own personas. And, oh, by the way, CM Punk told millions of people on a podcast, he was told, make sure Roman looks good. All these things made people reject Roman Reigns, especially because he was getting pushed as a top guy when fans wanted to see somebody named Daniel Bryan instead. So that plays into it, too. It's, Derek, my point is they're casting the talented wrestlers who fans want to cheer as heels. So what you're saying is right. Maybe that means Kevin Owens and AJ Styles should be babyfaces, and they need to do a better job finding heels to sell for them and lose to them, and then set up a narrative structure where the heels cheat and the fans are upset. And they actually boo the heels because they get wrapped up in a well-told story that's immersive, that draws them into the narrative so that they actually are rooting for Kevin Owens and AJ instead of going against the narrative and feeling conflicted or deciding to be rebellious. It's just, I think what you said, Derek, isn't inconsistent with what I said. It's bad casting combined with sloppy narrative structure. So what Travis said and what I said, respond to either or both.
I'll agree with most of that. I'll say that this is where I think your point kind of suffers a bit. Is first of all, if the bad guy who's presented as a bad guy, who the fans legitimately hate, gets good at his job, people start to like him. And then they have no choice but to turn him babyface. And then much like Dean Ambrose is now they'll start to boo him. And then also I think there is a stubbornness that comes with that suspension of disbelief that even if a guy progresses and gets good in front of our eyes, we hold on to that idea that he's not worthy of the spot because that's the idea that we've planted, fermented, and let grow in our heads. And having them be able to overcome it, I think we just want to make sure that we're right all the time and so we're slow to change our opinion. Roman Reigns in ring right now, the fact that people still claim that he's not good is ridiculous.
Yeah, but
he wrestled a 20-minute match against...
And he's good. No, Derek...
Last night,
he's had good... And I say it consistently. He has good matches, but he still comes across as a D-bag to a big part of the male audience. And to your point, if they have two wrestlers who fans respect, the fans, I think, will cheer the babyface who should be properly cast as a babyface, like Sami Zayn and Chris Jericho. Fans like both guys. They respect both guys. But they're willing to cheer, I will predict, Sami Zayn over Jericho because Jericho is super high, is a super high IQ heel who's consistent with his character on air, and he's against somebody who fans respect and like and want to see beat him. So part of it is you have to make sure that the babyfaces stay ahead of the heels who are good and have earned that spot. You don't want a heels who fans think just across the board on the roster don't deserve a spot on the roster. They're so awful. But you want to make sure that you cast correctly so that the baby faces are matched against fans respect and like and are rooting for more than the heel who maybe they respect somewhat. It's all about matchups. It's all about making sure that you pick the most popular respected guys to be on top and then tell a good story with the heels, and I think fans will play along. I just think they disrespect sloppy narratives, and they don't like it when there's such a discrepancy between who gets pushed and who they want to get pushed, or who's cast as a babyface and the wrestlers they respect more who are heels. So some of it is a matter of degree, Derek. And as long as you have a bunch of wrestlers who fans respect facing each other and you pick the right guys to be the babyface, I think most fans will play along.
I think that's maybe the thing is that we're talking about is the degree in which they'll play along. And I think your opinion of how much they'll play along differs from my opinion on how much they'll play along. Because right now I see more contrarian responses from the crowd.
Okay.
Then I see them willing to suspend disbelief and even buy into the narrative, even if it's sloppily executed. Because a lot of times in every television show and every movie, there's what ifs. Or why did this guy do that? Or that's stupid, or this is dumb. But in the movie narrative, you're willing to just go along with it. Wrestling fans are always looking for that loophole in which it didn't make sense, or it doesn't make sense, or this guy's casted this way, but he should have acted this way in a logical sense. People aren't logical. You know, I do illogical things every single day. But we don't allow slack, probably because we've been betrayed so often that we've been conditioned to always look for the things that are bad rather than the things that work well, and are good.
And I'll add one more to this, Derek, and then I'm curious for Travis' response. I think part of this is they've portrayed themselves as management as either heels or fools, whether it's Vicky Guerrero or the Authority. Even Teddy Long, a likable figure, was kind of the doofus, you know, sort of likable. But mostly, when you portray the brand as being run by an evil chairman and a privileged daughter and an asshole, King of Kings, whatever Triple H's multiple nicknames are.
Triple H?
Yeah.
Oh, most step brother or whatever?
Yeah.
Brother-in-law,
like,
son-in-law.
When those are the face of your company, you're inviting people to look to be contrarian. And so that's not happening at NXT. Why? Because people are rooting for the brand. They're rooting for William Regal. And kind of ironically, in this parallel universe, they're actually kind of rooting for Triple H, too. They like this version of him, and they're actually willing to suspend their disbelief and go along with the narrative. Why? Because they like the product, they like who they hire, they like who they push, they like the way it's presented, and there is a greater logic consistently, thoroughly, top to bottom in the way that NXT does things that minimizes even the exact same audience that we're talking about, who for a generation or two, Travis, have been conditioned to believe they know better than the promoters. But when the stories are executed well, and the wrestlers they hire and push, fans respect, the fans buy in, and they'll go along with it. Not to say they don't every once in a while, you know, cheer for both the heel and the face or whatever, but sometimes they save that to the end after the match is over. So anyway, that was a lot. With me and Derek, Travis, your thoughts on that talk, on this topic?
No, I was going to make the NXT point, and you did it. Like,
yeah.
No, we have the exact audience for the most part, even the harder of the hardcores that have been turned and giddy about wrestling again, and you know, just super excited for the Cruiserweight Classic, and you know. For that, which is just kind of strictly wrestling, less personality driven, but also on NXT, where week to week you get that 1 hour of just dynamic wrestling television, where it's not a bunch of fancy stuff, but logical. I don't even know if this is a good example, but it's not Georgia TBS, you know. Kind of episodic or the best world class just week to week to week putting story, but it's just simple and it makes sense, and at times it can catch fire for a few weeks and months and kind of feel like it did back in the day. But fans are again giddy about those situations, and those exact fans, and even the more snarky, smarter ones are excited again about pro wrestling in a way that they're not analyzing every single thing, or at least they wait until the show is over and
don't
call
give them,
it here or call
don't give them so many opportunities. Yeah. Do your job well, Travis. Not you, Travis. I'm talking to Travis. But if you do your job well, they're not sitting there looking for opportunities to show how incompetent you are at telling a story or casting the wrestlers the right way or pushing the right guys. And I'll even add to it, having Michael Cole be portrayed as this ultra dork for years, be the voice and face of the brand, has hurt. If Jim Ross were still calling Raw and Michael Cole left 7 years ago, I don't think that we'd be getting the same crowd reactions, because I think you would have Jim Ross telling a better story. And if you didn't have the Authority as heels making you have a negative feeling about the brand, I think that plays into the psychology of being rebellious. And so I believe they've created a monster that needs about 7 things to be changed for 3 to 5 years to fix. But it is very doable. This is not, oh, it's passe. Everybody knows that business is changing. It's a millennia. It's all those excuses. No, they all go away if you do 5, 6, 7 things better for 3 to 5 years. And NXT is a template. ROH is a template. There's plenty of examples in history where this works, but generationally, humans are not that different, Travis, than they used to be. You give them a good story, and you cast heels and faces correctly, and you don't portray the guy trying to sell you the product, Michael Cole, as a complete dork, And you actually have somebody like Mauro Ranallo or a Jim Ross who you like, and a William Regal as the authority figure, or Mick Foley as the authority figure. They warm to the brand. They start giving you the benefit of the doubt, and then you push the right guys as a face and the right guys as a heel, and you stop having the announcers talk about how, hey, Cesaro did what anybody should do, cheat to win, because he couldn't win fair and square three in a row, and he got lucky in London, so he's got to cheat now. And that makes him a babyface within our narrative. If you stop doing stupid-ass shit like that, maybe yeah, the narrative structure
will
work.
I think you can cut that time frame by two-thirds. And, I mean, look how long it took. It didn't take long at all, I should say, for NXT to catch on. 2 years.
Yeah.
And that was without – that first year was all on Hulu and Big E and Bo Dallas as your top guy.
Yes. Good point.
So I think if you do what we have been talking about for the last 3 to 5 minutes consistently for a year, I think you turn things around, because it's not going to take long for people to catch on, especially if you're consistent for, you know, a whole year. You give people 12 straight months of solid storytelling, and things that pay off that started 6 months, 8 months ago start paying off, and other things are getting planted, and they just see – not even consciously, just and those people that go, oh yeah, this is definitely, you know, but just fans will just catch on. They'll hear about it. They'll hear about it again. It's not that they hear about it once, like, oh, that happened, okay. Then 2 weeks later, when they hear something else, oh, and that totally makes sense. Oh, from what I heard 2-3 weeks ago, all right. And then a month later, I mean, it just builds. I mean, we know how things catch on. I think 3 years, we're seeing max results of that mindset.
No, you five or seven. Yeah, you talk me into it. I think that there's probably 3 to 5. Or there's probably 5 to 7 years. I don't know how far back we go to what the year was. Michael Cole was a heel commentator, except when he was telling you, "Trust me, buy the pay per view at the end of the show." But, you know, I guess I was kind of thinking,
6 years ago.
Yeah, I think maybe I was kind of thinking, well, it's been really bad for 5 to 7 years, maybe to take that long. But I think you're right. I think you see big differences in 1 year, and by 3 years, you've got people looking at things. All, you know, maybe 95% of the damage done can be fixed in 3 years, and really maybe a majority of it in a year. I mean, I really do believe that. I vociferously do not believe that people know too much because of the internet or all the wrestling books and all the podcasts it's hopeless, and that there'll always be contrarian fans who just arbitrarily are going to start cheering for Roman Reigns as soon as he turns heel. No, he's still a D-bag people don't like, and they're going to cheer if you put him against the right babyface. They're going to cheer the babyface. That's not a cultural, generational change. It's not some genie out of a bottle you can't put back. It's a result of all these other things that are fixable and changeable, and they can start next week. Travis.
Sure can.
Yeah. Thanks. Good show. Good conversation. Always enjoy talking wrestling with you.
Absolutely, Wade. Thanks, man.
Plug. You got an East Coast cast tomorrow. You'll be live watching the Cruiserweight Classic, I assume?
Yep. We typically are every week, but NXT for sure. I don't know how. Is NXT not coming on and they're getting an hour that way, or are they just going an hour extra?
Good question. I will look it up as you plug your show. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. We will be doing NXT and or Cruiserweight Classic live watch tomorrow on tomorrow's East Coast Cast. Give us a call, eastcoastcast.com, for all the information on how to contact us, Twitter, email, and live phone calls. We do that. We start at 6:30 Eastern, and we go into all hours of the night. So check us out, eastcoastcast.com. For all the information.
And I am tediously clicking through tomorrow's schedule, 8 p.m. NXT, 8 p.m. Eastern NXT, and then 9 to 11 Eastern Cruiserweight Classic. So a three-hour block with Bobby Roode tomorrow making his glorious Full Sail in-ring debut against No Way Jose, and then the two-hour epic finale of the Cruiserweight Classic. So really a fun night tomorrow night. Good timing to have a live show. That's over at eastcoastcast.com. And then Friday, the primetime edition, the Friday primetime edition of the PW Torch Livecast, Travis Bryant and Bruce Mitchell. So tune in then at 7 Eastern on Friday. Tomorrow, Pat McNeil joins me at 1 Eastern for the midweek edition of the live cast. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff. Cruiserweight Classic, NXT, Impact, Raw, SmackDown, Backlash, No Mercy, Clash of Champions, CM Punk, and more. And then Thursday, 1 Eastern, Kevin Nash joins me, formerly of the NWO, the Outsiders, Diesel. He's making his return to the live cast. We'll definitely talk about CM Punk. I know he's got thoughts on that from texting with him today. And that'll be fun. Give us a call or send email questions or topic suggestions to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com for either tomorrow's show with Pat, and I'll be hosting with Pat, or Thursday's show when I interview Kevin Nash live, both at 1 Eastern live, Wednesday and Thursday, respectively, at pwtorchlivecast.com. Travis, thanks again, and I look forward to hearing your show tomorrow and on Friday.
Indeed.
Excellent. We're going to close with a plug for PW Torch VIP. If you're not a VIP member, the live cast is free 5, 6, 7 times a week. Well, 6 or 7 times a week now, but it goes ad-free when you go VIP. These ads, these plugs get taken out. You can just listen straight through. Time is money, and you can show support for us. But in addition to that, in addition to close to 30 live casts per month that are ad-free on the VIP RSS feed, which is compatible with smartphone podcast apps. It is streamable in an ad-free environment on our website, which is mobile-friendly, our VIP ad-free website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly, but also tons of other audio shows. The live cast makes up less than 30% of the total audio that we put out every month with PW Torch VIP, the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, roughly 2 hours on average of The Fix with Todd Martin on Wednesdays, roughly 2 hours, sometimes three, with Bruce Mitchell on weekends, going really in-depth. No callers. We just pre-record high-quality audio, and those are just two of the shows. Those are the ones that I host. Post-pay-per-view roundtables that are VIP exclusive. Moonlighting with Greg Parks, Sean Radican's Wrestling Audio Community, the Travis Bryant East Coast Cast VIP bonus portion, and on, plus vintage radio shows from the 1990s. And that's what we're going to tell you about here. This is a really cool perk, and we're going to be turning up the frequency of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows and the Total Chaos radio shows. And here's some details on that, and we hope you'll go VIP. Here's some information on that. Thanks, everybody. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. All right, thanks again, everybody. We really appreciate your support. We've had tens of millions of downloads of this PW Torch livecast since we started, and it's pretty cool. And we love that you join us every week, and we'd love if you were to become a PW Torch VIP member and unlock all the other audio shows that we do and the rich, unmatched archives of back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter.
90 seconds.
Right, let's play ourselves out, and until tomorrow with Pat McNeil, Wade Keller, signing off. This is life.